welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio.
My name is Casey and R. Shasta Redding.
Check. But I keep giving you the website so you can find the archive later. It's Bob's job to get the other stuff in there.
Yeah.
See, we all have jobs to do.
Including the legal identification.
Well, and Bob's got the fancy microphone now, as we mentioned, first hour.
I'm going to depend on him a lot now.
And Bill's our foil.
Yes.
Welcome, Bill, the foil. So,
we're talking about marijuana and the treatment of cancer, which I mentioned earlier. My sister,
which was
just
the
gone
main
through.
Reason, supposedly, for legalizing it as a quote medicine.
Uh-huh.
So let's deal with that as medicine. It's funny. I have somebody in the chat room who says, "I'm crushed. All this time, I thought pot was medicine."
Yeah,
I'm sure they're kind of joking a little, but honestly, this really debunks the whole medicine deal.
Yeah, I just was when my sister went through this, and she told me she went with a friend down to, I guess, kind of a seedy part of town, which, again, you have a doctor who you pay a lot of money for to cure you of a major disease, and they send you down to a seedy part of town to buy a product that has no controls on it. And you don't know what you're buying. It really kind of blew my mind when she did that.
And our two new, well,
but however,
one
she
new
did,
vocabulary word, mute. It has mutagens in it.
Yeah, but and she did say that when she took this, she did get her appetite back, and she did start eating. So I thought, wow, maybe this is cool. But I knew that what she was buying was just kind of a crapshoot. You don't know what's in it. So let's talk about the use of marijuana
you
and cancer treatment. You said you had a lot of info on that.
Right. And I would just add, you know what the placebo response is from medication?
Yeah. Sure.
Oh.
Okay. So she could have had a placebo response. She could have also been weaning off her chemotherapy. So her nausea effects were going away. And that's why her appetite came back. There's a whole host of reasons as to why her appetite, and that's why we really need, you know, controlled studies when we use marijuana versus another medication to see that, is it truly medication or is this just a drug to get high?
Right.
And that's why we've had 20 years in California to do this. Have you seen the studies come out from marijuana and its effectiveness versus standard medication?
Well,
I haven't
either.
Comes
out of California, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to it because.
But there haven't been any.
No, and so I think you know people that want to claim these, you know, multitude. Like I said, what drug has more indications than supposedly marijuana has? You know, there isn't one. And so let's do the clinical studies and trials and see. And the reality is again, they've had since 1985 to do this. Because they were using it back then, right? We approved dronabinol back then, so they've had four decades to prove that marijuana works, and haven't seen it yet. This is from the Annals of Oncology. Cannabinoids, dronabinol and nambolone, again, both of those drugs were approved back in 1985, possess weak antiemetic efficacy combined with potentially beneficial side effects, including sedation and euphoria. This makes them a useful adjunct therapy, meaning something down the road, in selected patients. In the ASCO, the American Society of Clinical Oncology, and the National Clinical Trials guidelines, cannabinoids are recommended for patients intolerant of or refractory to, meaning resistant, to the serotonin receptor agonist, which is a whole host of drugs that came out in the early 90s. And if you remember before, I mentioned that multiple other drugs came out that really started to keep pushing dronabinol further and further down the line. So these serotonin antagonists such as ondansetron, granisetron, palonosetron, all of those drugs came out in the early 90s that really revolutionized how we treat nausea and vomiting and chemotherapy. So they have to be intolerant or refractory to those agents or steroids and aprepitant. Aprepitant is a new drug that came out in 2003. As I mentioned, again, we come out with newer and newer agents all the time. The serotonin agonists are so prevalent now, they're generic. They've been around so long, so they're generic and their price has gone down. In a systematic review of efficacy of oral cannabinoids in the prevention of nausea and vomiting, cannabinoids were found to be slightly better than dopamine receptor antagonists. including the phenothiazines, haloperidol, and metoclopramide. Those are agents from the 1970s. That's Compazine. That's Haldol. Okay, that's Reglan. Okay, despite this, their clinical utility was found to be generally limited by the high incidence of adverse events such as dizziness, dysphoria, and hallucinations. So again, when I talk about risk versus benefit, there's a lot of risk, dizziness, dysphoria, and hallucinations to try and then get the nausea and vomiting to go away. Again, we have other agents that don't have dizziness, dysphoria, and hallucinations that they could take. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, there was a person that died here in California. He was a cancer patient at UC Davis. And he was, we have various types of chemotherapy that we give people depending on their tumors that they have. And this person was... it was a blood dysgrasia, and those people undergo very massive amounts of chemotherapy and maybe even some stem cell replacement afterwards. But this guy died, and in fact, the doctors at UC Davis were saying they had multiple patients that had a very serious cancer fight that seemed to be more complicated as a result of what turned out to be a lethal fungal infection. And these fungi were growing on the marijuana plant. And it says they sometimes see 20 to 30% of the samples being sent through a lab contaminated with molds. 20 to 30%.
So are they ingesting this? Or are they smoking it? Or, I mean, how is, if they're smoking
I'm not exactly sure. They did say that they were users of medical marijuana.
Okay.
But again, these things also contain not only molds and fungi strains, but they also contain bacteria. And I think people that are closer to cancer patients understand you can't even bring in fresh flowers into a patient that's receiving chemotherapy for fear that they're going to contract the bacteria that may be growing in those fresh flowers.
Oh yeah, you can't even visit them. I mean, you have to. There's a point there where they have to be kind of isolated. I know my sister was. She had to be totally isolated for a period of time because her immune system was destroyed.
That's right. And so, as a result of destroying the immune system with the chemotherapy in attempts to kill the tumor or cancer that's growing, and again, they're at risk then for the normal bacteria's fungus, molds that are in our society that we breathe in every day. We have an active immune system. We can combat it. They cannot.
Right.
And so if they're being exposed then to these bacteria like Pseudomonas in flowers, that could kill them.
Wow. So
why would a doctor
back to the original question.
I mean or why would they recommend that they do that?
I just read to you the Annals of Oncology recommendations from ASCO. Good question.
Yeah.
Because dronabinol is the agent to use, not marijuana. And even dronabinol is way down the line, as I mentioned, for products to consider for nausea and vomiting.
Jeez.
Wow.
So I guess if you have a relative out there or you and you're going through cancer treatments and your doctor's telling you to go use marijuana, you might want to look at what else your doctor doesn't know.
Why if you're willing to, you know, and there are those people that are unwilling to accept Western medicine. Why if you're willing to accept Western medicine, are you turning to marijuana?
Right. Well, because, it's been around since
the 80s. The hype, the media, the people being told, and this socialization, this recreationalization. Again, when we talk about recreation, to me, that's bicycling. That's going out into nature. That's recreating. But getting high and losing your brain function is not recreating to me.
But it's natural.
Yeah, right.
That's another one I hear. It's organic.
And then
it's
natural. You look at these grow sites. You look at the pictures of these grow sites in our national forest, and
they're littered with
pesticides. So is poison hemlock.
Yeah. Yeah, that's natural.
Have a little arsenic.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point, though. You look at some of these illegal grow sites in our forest, and they are absolutely
they have to wear hazmat suits. We have law enforcement and people that are dealing with it that are getting really sick just from eradicating the plants. They're not ingesting the plants. They're literally just cutting them down and carrying them away.
But
the stuff that blows
off
of them.
Well, there is contact risk from the THC because we know THC does get absorbed through the skin. It's fat soluble. So the THC would get through someone's skin, but the bigger concern are those fungicide, herbicide, pesticides that they're spraying all over these plants.
Yeah, it's the
so
poisons.
The fungus, the molds, or the pests will not eat their product and they're thus lose their profits. Mm-hmm. So they don't care what they're doing because they're creating a larger and larger product, right? That's what they're attempting to do with this. They don't care what ultimately somebody is inhaling or ingesting later on. They could care less.
Right. Hmm. That's mind-bending.
That is mind-bending.
Let's take a really quick break, and maybe when we come back, let's veer into the PTSD lane because we've got quite a bit of information posted on that, and that was a real eye-opener for me anyway because I know that's also being recommended as a solution.
I know. I've heard a lot about that.
All righty. So we'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. Join us online while Bob over there, fortunately, I caught him unaware because I was sort of almost on time. How confusing.
Yeah, so you totally threw me off.
How confusing and disruptive.
Not that awesome.
What was I thinking? Back. Okay. So, although marijuana is not legal at the federal level, we have doctors who work in a federal system recommending that veterans use marijuana to help their PTSD, and just a slight complication that if they happen to have it on them when they're on VA property, including the parking lot, they wind up with a federal drug charge. Little snag there.
But the doctors are recommending the use?
And after everything I've learned from having you on the program for 3 hours, let's see, this hour and the other two, I'm wondering, why are they doing this?
Right.
Yeah, good question. I think they need to look at the research and the literature. We do have it. It's out there. As I shared with you, there was a study done at a VA in which patients were diagnosed and admitted to specialized veteran affairs treatment programs for PTSD. And they were assessed at intake for their marijuana use and then 4 months after discharge. And they were looked at other covariate analysis such as their PTSD symptoms, their drug and alcohol use, their violent behavior, and their employment. And when they looked at over 2,276 cases, they saw with statistically significance that those people had worse outcomes in PTSD severity, statistically significant, and violent behavior that was associated with marijuana use, as well as measures of alcohol and drug use. when compared to those people that stopped their marijuana or never used marijuana. So those guys that continued to use after they were admitted for PTSD or started after, they were statistically significantly at more risk for having worse PTSD outcomes, more violent behavior, and more measures of use of drugs and alcohol. Yeah. So does that seem like an appropriate drug
well,
to treat somebody with PTSD?
Well, obviously no. And then the other thing that is so much of an issue, I mean, a lot of chronic pain with our military folks, and I'm not absolutely not suggesting it's not real. It absolutely is. But we have a lot of people with chronic pain. Now, since this opioid thing has become a big issue, we have a lot of people who are going from, you know, four pain pills a day, say. I have one guy, what was he, 10 a day or something like that? It was a really high number. I mean, I don't take them, so I don't know if that's a lot or a little. What it would
depends
feel.
On the strength of the tablet.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I don't know what
you're
that
taking,
would feel like.
You know, 100 milligram morphine tablet versus 30 milligram tablets. You know, you think, oh, three is a lot. Well, no, the guy that's taking the 100 milligram tablet's taking a lot of morphine.
Right. So this guy was taking like 10 of these pills, and they were going to make him now, they were cutting it down to one per day. Same.
And again, that could be switching from what we call immediate release opiates to a long release, long acting type of product.
In this particular case, and I know everybody's different, but in this, because I asked some questions, and in this particular case, it was the same medication, but it was from 10 to 1 because of these new rules, et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
so,
in part, it could be the same drug, like
right?
I said, morphine, going from morphine immediate release, 10 milligrams, to morphine sustained release, 100 milligrams.
Sure. Well,
it's the same drug, but it's just being delivered, and the way it works is the immediate release will break down immediately and get the buzz, whereas the long acting continues to dissolve and disintegrate as it's going through your intestinal tract, slowly releasing over time. What the drug addicts have found is that if you crush it, it now becomes immediate release. And so rather than having a 10 milligram immediate release tablet, you have a 100 milligram worth of morphine if they crush it. So the drug companies have been working now for several years on stopping that. But the drug addicts are always ahead, and that's what they've done in the past.
Hmm. Well, and the tough part is, so when these changes are kind of radical like that, I know that opioid use, even though it was for a legitimate condition, but that use when cut back so severely, I know that there are a lot of people that utilize VA that have now moved into heroin use.
Again, we don't know the specifics of this case, and so I can't really speak to what's going on.
But I've heard it enough that I know it's not a one-off.
I would suspect there are other things going on in this case that probably you're not aware of.
Sure.
Because, again, step number one or recommendation number one from the CDC, Center for Disease Control, and when they came out for how we should treat chronic pain back in last year, 2016, their first recommendation was non-pharmacologic and non-opiate use. Okay? So you don't know if they're – and I could tell you from personal experience with patients at a VA in Fresno when I worked there in a chronic pain patient clinic, okay? It was myself and an anesthesiologist that saw the patients. If they needed a back injection, they went to the anesthesiologist. If they were staying on chronic meds, they were seeing me. And we also involved, though, other non-pharmacologic treatments as well as non-opiate treatments in these patients. And you would be surprised on how well patients do with physical therapy.
Oh, sure.
And occupational therapy. Adjusting, for example, did you know, and I've had chronic back, I had a back disc problem for a while. Did you know sitting backwards on the toilet is a lot easier to have a bowel movement if you have a back pain?
Well,
it is.
Okay, that's confusing. But yeah, that would kind of make sense, maybe.
And amazingly, it works. And so those were little tips and things like that we would, you know, get from our physical therapy and occupational therapy people. So again, I can't comment on, you know, this guy's case that you're raising.
No. And my only
there were probably a whole host of other things that they also implemented, as well as downward adjusting their opiates, but also a whole host of other activities and things that should be done.
Right.
And again, some of these people think that, well, it's their opiate that's going to do it. And that's another issue in the recommendation is, recommendation number two is establish goals as to what the level of pain reduction is going to be and what the level of functioning should be. And so they, again, they have 12 steps in their recommendations that they recommend, and it goes over all of these types of issues. And I don't think most people recognize this. When you're getting a pain medication, it should not be going from a pain score of 10 to 0. That is not realistic, okay? And what's deemed a clinical success is a 30% reduction, meaning your pain score goes from 10 to 7. That's success. We should not be expecting to go down from 10 to 0.
Right.
That's an unrealistic expectation.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, have that expectation.
Well, and my only point in bringing that up is it's not the, and I realize there are a whole host of factors, and I'm not saying that it's any sort of a blame thing. My only point in even raising that issue is that that's the interplay between those two. You know, that's how you get into the pot realm, because I've also heard that. Well, now that I can't take as much pain medication, my doctor told me maybe if I start using marijuana, that will help. These things are connected. The opioid
right.
use and the, whether it's a pain pill or it's heroin, which just, I mean, when I hear heroin, someone's using heroin, I think of someone who lives on the street in Detroit. And I guess it mm-hmm. still blows my mind that these are high school kids. I mean, these are the kid
yep.
down the street. It's no longer like heroin, you know, like this scary, far, far away. I mean, you have to really make an effort to go to a place where people used heroin. It's everywhere now.
No, it's everywhere, and
no.
it's cheap.
And it's all kind of, but it's swimming in a connected pool. And
yep.
I do not understand why medical professionals would and I realize a lot of the pot doctors are, I guess, I'm going to say marginally medically professionals. But, I mean, they're meeting with people in coffee shops and stuff. And I'm just curious why they would walk them into the use of marijuana when that just lowers the inhibitions and potentially helps them make some more bad decisions, you know?
Right. Well, again, I say, you know, again, it's the socialization of marijuana that's creating this. We didn't have people running around in the 1980s saying how great marijuana was, did we?
No, it was underground at that point. It was
right, and so therefore, you know, we didn't have this thought process going on in medicine. Again, medicine, you have to understand the medical doctors. Ask them how much pharmacology they got in training in school.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them. It's maybe 2 quarters. I took 3 years. Okay? That's why, again, we are the drug experts. The pharmacists understand the drugs. The physicians are diagnosticians. They diagnose. They also have the ability to prescribe medications. That's why they call it the practice of medicine. They also get educated by drug salespeople on how to use their drug. And as we're finding now with lawsuits being filed by states, and they're winning against the pharmaceutical companies for their inappropriate sales practices for opiates in the 2000s, they're losing. They're losing millions of dollars in these lawsuits now to the states because they're being shown for, again, the drug dealers that they were and promoting their controlled substance inappropriately.
Hmm. So is marijuana... it probably is. But is it prescribed for pain?
No prescriptions. Remember.
Right.
Recommendation.
Recommendation.
Yeah.
Right.
Where's the study?
Right.
The last I saw was moderate pain.
So,
moderate pain.
Right. So are doctors...
is all it's going to be able to be used for. and those studies are not good. Mm-hmm. So let's see it go head to head against morphine.
Right.
Let's see it. Let's see that study. Come on, NIH. Get to work.
Yeah.
National Institute of Health. Let's see it. Let's see it, pot community. Let's see it go against morphine or Vicodin or Percocet. Let's see it.
Right.
Oral, they're edibles, they're 1,000 milligram brownie versus 10 milligrams of morphine. I want to see those people get couch locked. I think that would be very entertaining.
Oh, my gosh. When we come back, we've got to talk about couch lock. We're going to take a really quick break. Bill's looking at me with that funny look on his face.
Couch lock?
Yeah, yeah. He talked about it last time, but he reminded me on the phone about couch lock. And that also goes to some of the driving. Oh, my gosh, there's so much more. I wish you were on the phone with me a week ago. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
White lips, pale face, breathing in snowflakes, burnt lungs, sour taste. Lights gone, days end, struggling to pay rent, long nights, strange men. And they say she's in the class 18, stuck in her daydream. Been this way since 18, but lately her face seems slowly sinking, wasting, crumbling like pastries. They scream the worst things in life come free to us, 'cause we're just under the upper hand. I'll go mad for a couple grams, and she don't wanna go outside tonight. And in a pipe she flies to the motherland, or sells love to another man. It's too cold outside for angels to fly.
Talking to that reefer man.
Reefer man.
Have you ever met funny reefer man?
Reefer man.
Have you ever met funny reefer man?
Reefer man.
If he says he walks the ocean, anytime he takes a notion, then you know you're talking to reefer man.
Reefer man.
Wow. Is this as old as it sounds?
It is as old as it sounds.
What year?
It's Cab Calloway. I would have to look that up. But
all right. Back to that later.
I'd just say 40s.
40s, yes.
Yeah, wow.
Yes.
Gosh, they were joking about that back then.
You ride alone, you ride with the reefer
exactly.
man.
Exactly. Nice one.
That's back in the day when cocaine was legal.
So, my things have changed. Okay, so tell Bill about couch lock.
Yeah, what is couch lock?
Honestly, that explains a lot of the...
We talked about BHO, the butane hash oil. Which is a very high concentration of THC, whereas, again, in a joint in the 60s and 70s was, 0.5 to 2% THC. Marijuana that you could purchase in Colorado now is up to 30% THC that you can smoke. But this is 80 to 95% THC in this butane hash oil, in which they use butane to strip the THC from the marijuana plant and create this goopy substance at the bottom that they will either use with a bong and a hot nail and inhale it, or they will put it in electronic cigarettes and smoke it. And again, one of these hits could be as equivalent to about 64 joint hits.
Wow.
What I'd like to play for you right now, so you can imagine this amount of THC going up to the brain. This is on YouTube, I found. And you see, it's a video picture of this kid. Looks like he's a teenager. He's surrounded by his friends, and you'll hear them in the background. And the camera's focused on him, and he's been stuck sitting on this couch, and he's frozen. He's frozen in this position, and you're watching this for about 15 seconds, and then this happens.
Wow.
How do you like that?
So he's screaming, I was just paralyzed. But I'm assuming when his body couldn't move, his mouth couldn't say that, right? He had to wait until it
stopped?
Okay. Oh, my God.
I mean, every time I watch that video gives me the chills. Every time. And I got the chills again. I just can't believe. And did you hear his friends in the background saying marijuana never kills anybody?
Oh, okay. You need to send me that so I can put it on the page and we can listen to it a little better.
Unless you're driving around with your buddies and you take a hit. And
yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
and you're the one.
You're paralyzed.
Behind
you're
the
paralyzed, and you cannot move. Guess where you're driving?
Uh-huh.
Over and under and into and...
Oh, my gosh. I've never heard of that.
That was the result. You could see like a bong in front of him, and I think you can even see marijuana in a big bag in front of this kid. Again, looks like a teenager, and he was just paralyzed.
And was that from smoking this hash oil?
I suspect. I don't know. Huh. It's called on YouTube, 2014 First Time Dabbers and Dab Fails. Compilation. So dabbing is what they call it when they're using the butane hash oil. So I suspect that's what happened here.
Wow, that's...
This is butane hash oil, and you see the results. And so there are cases in Arizona. I was trying to find it there on the break. I couldn't find it, unfortunately. But there's cases of little children, a child coming in. His parents were couch locked and was telling them that the younger child had fallen in the swimming pool and to please get up and go help him. And they couldn't. And that child subsequently went in to try and save his sibling, and that child died too.
So both the kids died?
Yep.
Holy criminy.
So you look at all these people are at home smoking pot with their kids, you know, while their kids are home. Not with their kids necessarily, but...
Oh, they've left them in cars in Arizona and killed them in the heat. They forgot about them. Multiple times. There's multiple cases. Just go on. Just Google it on the internet. You'll see it.
You know, it's funny. It's not funny, but you hear of all these places that get burned to the ground when they're making this with butane. And there is an application in process right now for in a little community up north of us called Shasta Lake. And they want to open in their industrial park. A company wants to open a facility to manufacture hash oil through a butaneless process. So there will be no danger, but they want to commercially manufacture hash oil. And so, they need a city permit to do it. And, of course, now that it's legal in California, We're gonna mass manufacture this now.
And the reason why they're using butane right now is because it's cheap and readily available. Unlike they did with, Sudafed, where they took it off the front counter and put it behind the counter for pharmacies, because they were using that for methamphetamine. There's been no restriction on butane in this state. Go and buy up as many cans as you want. Nobody's reporting it to anybody anywhere. Why don't we have a law, legislature?
Actually,
California legislature, get to work.
Yeah, actually,
let's
see a law on
limiting the amount of butane, and not only that, but let's report it to the Department of Justice when people are going in and purchasing the butane, just like we do with Sudafed.
Right.
Yeah, they are working on that. The who's really pressing it is law enforcement.
Oh yeah, and I would think, well, the medical community should, too. when you have a 30-year children in a trainer's hospital and they're from butane hash oil explosions in your burn unit, I would think that would kind of push you to say, hey, maybe we should have a few less kids here from butane hash oil burns.
Yeah, because, well, and from a, also again, from a law enforcement standpoint, those guys are getting injured. You know, the fire.
Oh, absolutely. Where they're walking in. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. So the fires, the toxicity, yep. There's a lot of chemical poisoning happening of law enforcement personnel that are dealing with the outdoor grows and the BHO plants in a neighborhood. I mean, how'd you like to live next door to a guy who's doing something that flammable, house blows up, well, there goes
yep.
the neighborhood, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And again, it's on Prop 65. We have a Proposition 65, which is the State of California Environmental Protection Agency. Chemicals known to the state to cause cancer or reproductive toxicity. Again, that's the mutagenicity. And our good friend, 2,4-dibutadiene, which is a byproduct of butane, is on that list. And so if these people are not clearing out all these remnants of the butane, this is what's being used. It's 1,3-butadiene, 1,3. It causes cancer, and that's, we've known that since 1988. And it causes developmental abnormalities in the female and male, and that's been known since April 16th of 2004.
So is that a byproduct of
yes.
this hash oil? And so
yes.
is it like a residue that's in a house?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, wow.
It's in this goop of what they're using that they're smoking. And then my understanding is they also use this to create their can of butter and other things that they then turn around and use in all their cookies and
other things.
So they start with the BHO to create those others.
Right. So if you're manufacturing that product in a house and you're all done and you walk away, does that house have like a chemical residue on its surfaces?
Sure. Potentially, yeah. I don't know how volatile this is and how long it would potentially last or if you could eat it out. I don't know. But yeah, oh yeah, potentially. And again, it's in all of your edibles.
Hmm.
It's in all these dabs.
Yeah.
A mutagen and carcinogen.
And again,
Proposition 65 lists the chemicals. It's right
yeah.
there.
And
1,3-butadiene.
And that's the same products that your cancer docs are saying, hey, go down, it'll help you get rid of your nausea. That makes no sense to me.
it starts to make less sense the more you think about it.
Yeah.
And as far as, I guess, gosh, do we have to take another break? What is happening? Are we time traveling? I don't know.
No, we're just staying on time.
Good Lord, every time I look up, I'm like, I was just checking the clock. I didn't really, Okay, we do have to do another celebration of capitalism, and that's okay. But there's so much more we want to know. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
More of these outside the door. She took four more. pursuit of happiness just seems a bore. And if you take more of those, you will get an overdose. No more running for the shelter of a mother's little helper. They just help you on your way through your busy dying day.
And that was, what, Valium? Back in the 60s?
Amphetamines.
Yeah.
Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mother's were, Little Helper.
Yeah, that was the doctor's.
Now they're singing about opioids.
God. Oh, we have a lot of drug music.
There's no logical reason that Keith Richards is still alive, but he is.
Yeah, that makes no sense. It's kind of like George Burns smoked till he was like, what, 100?
Yes.
Okay, so we've
called genetics.
Yeah, can't outrun the genetics, and you can't even ruin them, I guess. So I guess we did not talk about couch lock in the last program because Bill would have remembered. So apparently, you and I only spoke about it on the phone, and I cheated our listeners out of it. And before we leave that thought, I mean, how highly likely is it that hits people while they're driving, so sitting behind the wheel?
It could, and especially with the use of electronic cigarettes, it makes it much more portable, and the availability for them to do it behind the wheel is huge. And which also I received this past week information on how the FDA is going to be coming down on electronic cigarettes, and get this, about its hazards for tobacco and nicotine.
Hmm.
No mention of marijuana use with electronic cigarettes.
Oh, you're kidding.
Is the FDA kind of sticking their head in the sand? What do you think?
All day?
Uh-huh.
I sent this back to Bob DuPont. I don't know if that name rings a bell, but he is the author of the Controlled Substance Act in 1970. He's still around. I emailed him, Bertha Madras, a whole bunch of, Kevin Sabet, who's with SAM, and asked, I'm completely dumbfounded. Could somebody explain to me why the FDA is not mentioning electronic cigarette use and marijuana, please?
Mm-hmm. Well, now, electronic cigarettes, do they actually, I know they have a liquid in them, and then it vaporizes it.
Correct.
Does it do that through heat, or is it?
Yes.
It does. Okay.
Yes, and they have these cartridges that they sell again at the town right next to me. It's on the internet. And you can see these cartridges for electronic cigarettes. And I sent those to the whole gang and said, and here's the evidence that these are, marijuana is being used in electronic cigarettes. Hello.
Right.
So they're using they put the hash oil in there.
The response I got was, and these were big, very big people. Well, why don't you let the FDA head guy know?
Wow.
Why don't you let the FDA? It's like, you guys have pretty big names. Why don't you do that?
Yeah. Isn't
yeah.
That what we have them for.
Because who's protecting the public?
Right.
64.
So they're manufacturing basically the little cartridges. And on those electronic cigarettes, do you like refill the little bottle yourself?
I believe so. Right. I'm not sure.
So you can
put
anything in there you want and
vaporize it. Yeah, they have various things. They have, from herbs to, again, nicotine, straight nicotine, to tobacco products that they're burning in there. They have all various types of stuff.
Yeah, because I work with a fellow who's trying to quit smoking, and he's gone to these electronic cigarettes, and which, to me, I'm not sure what the benefit is, because I think they still get the nicotine.
Correct.
Through the electronic cigarette.
So it'd be a way of trying to taper down. It's like with the patches and nicotine, right? You've heard of those that
they
slap on their arm.
Right.
And it's the same sort of concept. I don't know the efficacy. I think there has been some studies, but I'm not up on them as to how more efficacious. But there is a hand-to-mouth syndrome with smokers.
Uh-huh.
And so whereas a patch on the arm isn't helping with that, the electronic cigarettes potentially could, right? If you're tapering down the dose of nicotine in that cartridge.
Sure.
And so they're still fulfilling their hand-to-mouth need, whereas the patch on their arm doesn't do that.
It's funny, I never even thought of the crossover between the electronic cigarettes and marijuana use. I guess there's no reason why you couldn't put the chemical in there.
Oh, absolutely, and they are. They are. Hello.
It's
they
like
are.
It's an electronic
McFly.
Bomb now.
McFly.
Yeah.
Yep. And for the FDA to say, oh, we're going to make this big push for teenage use of e-cigarettes next year about tobacco and nicotine. And when I read that, I fell off my chair. I said, and you're not mentioning the word marijuana when you have half the states in the U.S. have approved medical marijuana, and you're just going to ignore it? I know the FDA doesn't believe in it, right? The FDA's come out and said, and they've produced the studies to say it's not effective as medicine. But to stick your head in the sand?
Right. Just let it roll over the top of you.
So what do you think now that half the states have approved? Where are we headed?
I think we're doomed. Yeah. I think we're doomed unless we have somebody wake up and read the medical studies and see the clinical evidence of it causing increases in hospitalizations, increases in deaths on the road, increases in suicide. Again, I mentioned this last time. It is the number one killer found in the bloodstream of teenagers in Colorado. Hmm. Marijuana exceeds alcohol.
So you say the number one killer, how?
Suicide.
That it's found in the bloodstream. People are committing suicide. This is another reason why somebody with PTSD should not be smoking marijuana.
Right.
People commit suicide. Also, homicide. Remember, Chris Kyle was killed by a marijuana user, was shot. He was the American sniper.
Yep.
Was killed by a chronic pothead who was known to be very aberrant. Again, PTSD, using marijuana, and he shoots Chris Kyle. Again, found in 16% of ages 10 to 19 years of age from 2009 to 2013 in Colorado. The drug found most commonly in the bloodstream of these suicide victims, teenagers, 16% of the time, marijuana, 11% alcohol, opiates, 5.7%. Three times higher than opiates.
Hmm. You think that may be just due to availability?
Oh, absolutely. They opened their medical marijuana shops in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2012 they voted for the recreational. So this time frame is from 2009 to 2013.
Right.
This is the Colorado Violent Death Reporting System. Colorado's Department of Public Health and Environment.
And anybody who wants to look at
data.
Those studies, we've posted those. So
yep.
You don't have to.
This is reality land, people. Emergency room visits going up.
Yeah.
Hospitalizations going up. Addiction clinic going up. All this is happening in Colorado and Washington.
Pot bad.
Yeah.
Opioids bad.
Just wait until they get into it. They demand that they be able to use them at work.
Yeah.
Just wait.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
God.
Coming. That's
thanks
coming.
A million. We've
Dr.
been
Drum,
speaking
thank
with
you for
Dr. Philip
on.
Drum. And you can find all the information, including the archive of the program, here momentarily on WeThePeopleRadio.us. Thanks for listening.
By the way, Aaron, you were correct on the Rolling Stones. That the drug is assumed to be... Valium or Milltown.
There you go.
Wikipedia said it, so it must be true.
I knew one of those.
There you got it. It's on the internet. Must be true.
All right. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.
Say no couch lock.